what we share together. And the first is this. I'll put up on the screen, unconditional welcome. Unconditional welcome. I'm sure we've all been blessed from time to time being invited to somebody's house. And it's great to be invited anywhere, but to be invited to somebody's house for a meal is good. Now, when we go to somebody's house for a meal, we don't get to choose the food, I don't think. You know, we're not presented with menus or anything like that. We go to somebody else's house and we know they choose the menu. They choose how it's going to be because it's their house. They issued the invitation and they decide who comes. Now, it might be that you turn up at somebody's house, you've been invited, and you think, oh, I'm really looking forward to this. It's just going to be us and them sharing this nice meal. And then you discover, you know, the people's house where you've got, they haven't just invited you. Has this ever happened to you? They haven't just invited you, but they've invited their neighbours and their friends and other people. You don't know who they are or where they're from or anything. And the evening has completely changed for you. And we realise in that moment, well, I should be happy that I was invited. You know, it was up to the owner of the house, the person who issues the invitation, it was up to them, whoever else they invited. It's not up to me to complain either about the menu or who else is there. And it's a very simple thing I want to say right here, is that when we share communion together, as we share bread and we share the cup together, we have to remember it is Jesus at the head of the table. It's not me and it's not you. It is Jesus. Jesus decides. Now, I'm going to use this word. I don't really mean it. Jesus decides the rules. And there aren't really rules. But he decides. This is how it's going to be. You know, and we're in no position to complain. You know, we're in no position to say, oh, invite them? Really? I don't. It's not up to us. It is Jesus at the head of the table. And it is Jesus who invites you. Jesus invites you. And whoever else he invites is up to Jesus. And I want to say this clearly. There are no barriers to you or to me. The answer is yes. If the question is asked, can I come? Do you know what Jesus says? He says, yes. Yes, you can come and share. Now, we may not be comfortable with that in our own homes. Somebody turns up at the door and says, oh, I see you're having a meal and you've got friends. Do you know? And some stranger turns up at the door and says, do you mind if I come in? You know, the chances are, it's like, I don't think so, or whatever. And yet, when we come to communion, and we share bread and we share the cup together, we remember that the one at the head of the table is Jesus. It is Jesus who invites us, and there are no barriers. The answer is yes. And we come understanding there is an unconditional welcome. Now we can say, yes, but what about something I've done? What about the fact that I just don't feel I'm good enough to eat with you? What about the shame that I carry with me because of something I did years ago? What about that thing I did recently? Just that sense of I'm not good enough. The answer is yes, you're welcome. And I love the story, and we have told it so many times. I love the story in Luke's Gospel, chapter 15, where Jesus, he actually tells three different stories. He tells a story, first of all, about a man who owns 100 sheep, and he loses one of the sheep, and he leaves the 99, and the man goes out in search of the one. And when he finds that lost sheep, he brings it back and he's so pleased, he's so delighted he's found the lost sheep that he calls his friends and neighbours and says, come and celebrate with me. And then the second story Jesus tells is of a woman who has 10 coins. And obviously these 10 coins are very precious to her. We're not told what they were for or how she acquired the 10 coins, but we're told she's got 10 coins and clearly they're very precious to her and she loses one. And Jesus says this woman scours her whole house. She searches high and low. She wants to find the one that was lost. And she celebrates finding the one who was lost. And then the third story. The third story is of a man who has two sons, an elder son and a younger son. And the younger son says, well, he didn't say it in the story, but we understand. The younger son, he knows that when his dad dies, he will inherit from his dad. But he thinks, why wait till my dad dies? And he said, Dad, can I have my inheritance now? And his dad says, okay. So what did his dad have to do? Don't know. Maybe his dad had to sell half of his stuff to give the son his inheritance. And the younger son takes his inheritance off, or his share of the inheritance, and goes to a far-off land, and he just, well, he has great time. Apparently, he uses up all of that inheritance. And then he's left with nothing, and the only work he can get is feeding out the pigs. And as he looks after somebody else's pigs, which for him, coming from where he'd come from, feeding out, clearing out the pigs and all that kind of stuff was a really degrading job. And he looks at what the pigs are eating, just the slops, and he says, if only I could eat that, because I've got nothing. And he says, you know what? The servants in my father's house, they have more than this. So what I'll do, I'll go home and I'll grovel before my dad and I'll say, I'm not worthy to be your son. Make me like one of your servants. And as he immediately leaves and he begins his journey home and he practices on the way home, Father, I'm not worthy to be your son. Make me like one of your servants. Father, I'm not worthy to be your son. Make me like one of your servants. And do you remember how the son, practicing, rehearsing his words, goes home? But his dad is waiting for him. His dad sees him when he's still a long way off. And we're told that his dad sees him and drops everything and runs up the road. And as soon as he gets to his son, of course, has got his words ready and begins his speech, but his dad won't hear of it. His dad just grabs a hold of him, gives him a big hug and a kiss and says, you're my son. You were dead, but now you're alive again. And he immediately tells his servants, prepare a meal. Gather the friends and neighbours. We are going to celebrate together. And I love that story. It just reminds us, whatever situation we've been in, the welcome is still yes. And we will make up all sorts of stories for ourselves. But the answer from God our Father is yes. So that's the first thing I want to reflect. As we share on communion, there's an unconditional welcome. Jesus is at the head of the table. And we are grateful to be invited. Second, I want to use this word reconciliation. Reconciliation. Reconciliation is about two people, two parties coming back together after they've had a blow up. After things have gone wrong, they come back together, they are reconciled. And you remember, we read earlier from the first book in the Bible, from Genesis, that story about Jacob and Laban. You know, they'd fallen out and they seek to be reconciled. They seek to come back together again. And I read the particular story because at the end of the story, what do they do to mark the fact that they have come back together is they share a meal together. A few years ago, I read a book called Christianity Rediscovered. I don't know if any of you picked up on this. Christianity Rediscovered by Vincent Donovan. Vincent Donovan was a priest, and he felt called by God to go to East Africa to share the Christian story, to share the Christian faith with the Maasai tribe that lives mainly in East Africa. But he said that as he went, even as he went, he became aware, do you know, I'm aware of church in a particular way. I'm aware of all the words we say and the songs that we sing and the prayers that we pray and all that kind of thing. And I'm going to these Maasai people. They know nothing of this. How on earth am I going to communicate the Christian story to these people? And he goes and he, you know, to cut a long story short, he meets with this particular tribe, particular part of the tribe. And the Maasai people regularly would have gatherings together, different big family groups. And so he asks if it's okay for him to join them. And he joins them. And he figures out the best way, because it's a wonderful book to read, because he realizes all the ways he's ever thought of the Christian faith perhaps won't communicate at all with these people. And he figures out, well, what I can do is tell a story, because that's what they do. They tell stories when they get together. So he begins by telling the story about Abraham, the man who searched for God, and then Isaac, and he tells a story about Jacob and Laban and falling out and all that. And he tells the whole story all the way through. And eventually he gets to the story about Jesus, and he talks to them about Jesus and so on. And it's an extraordinary account. And it's a very open and honest account of just, you know, Vincent Donovan's own ignorance and the assumptions he makes about what the Christian faith is. And he comes to the point where some of the Maasai people have accepted they are going to be followers of Jesus. In fact, the whole family group decide on as one to become followers of Jesus. And when Vincent Donovan challenges this, they say, no, no, look, you need to understand, either we all accept Jesus or none of us do. You know, which is really interesting. Either all of us or none of us. And they all decide together, this big family group. And so he begins to teach them the different things, the sacraments. And he comes to scratching his head and thinking, how am I going to communicate about communion? But then he realized that the Maasai already knew about communion. You see, when the Maasai families fall out and they separate, when they work for reconciliation, when they work to come back together, they have conversations, you know, delegations will go and talk to each other first, and they'll arrange a meeting place, and then they will get together for a meeting together to thrash out what they'd fallen out about. And then when they've thrashed it out, when they've said everything that needs to be said, they agree it's all behind them. But the key is they share a meal together. And it's the eating of the meal together that says, okay, it's all dealt with. It's done. And as we come to share communion together, that's what it's about. It's about having a meal, part of a meal together, to say, okay, whatever we've done, it's done. Forgiveness, I say, is a given. Forgiveness is a given. You do not need to grovel before God for forgiveness. Forgiveness is a given. God forgives you, whatever you've done, whatever you've said. And relationship is on the mend. Now, quite deliberately put it this way, relationship is on the mend. If you've ever fallen out with anybody, you ever fallen out with them? You ever fallen out with anybody and you've come back together and you've apologized and you've tried to make it up with the other person and all the rest of it? Now, one of you, you might walk away thinking, right, that's all sorted. But the other person might be going, okay, right, we have apologized, but I'm still sore about what happened. I'm still a little bit unsure. Will you do it again? And there's caution. And this is why I use this phrase, relationship is on the mend. You see, we can come to God and we can say to God, I have done wrong, I've sinned, forgive me. And we know that because God is God, forgiveness is a given. But I say relationship is on the mend. Because we can receive forgiveness, but we need to live within that forgiveness. We need to live a new life. And if we don't change our behavior, you know, if we've fallen out with somebody because we're always hurting them, you know, we can say, will you forgive me? You know, I feel like sometimes saying, you know, never mind apologizing, just change your behavior. Because that's what we want, really, is the change of behavior. We don't want somebody to keep hurting us. And it's not the apology, it's the changing behavior. So we say relationship is on the mend. And that's true with God. We are forgiven. But we need to live in a new way. We need to live. How is it that I can live now without doing the stuff that brings shame to me? How can I live now without doing the stuff that hurts? So relationship is on the mend. Reconciliation is here. There's an unconditional welcome from Jesus. And there is reconciliation. There's us coming back together with God. And then our note here, it is strength for the journey. It is strength for the journey. When Jesus took the bread and he gave thanks to God and he broke it, and then he shared it with his disciples. He said those extraordinary words, this is my body. This is my body. He just took bread and said, this is my body that is given for you. And we're encouraged to eat the bread. And we say, in some way, this is the body of Christ. What are we doing? What does that mean? When we receive the bread and eat it, what are we doing? What we're doing is this. We are taking of Jesus and saying, as I eat this bread, I am accepting into myself the values of Jesus, the way of Jesus. I'm accepting into myself that Jesus loved with an everlasting love. And I say, that's the life I want in myself. When we take the bread, we accept that Jesus forgave and forgave and forgave. And we eat the bread and we say, this is the life I want in myself. And when we eat the bread, we accept Jesus was compassionate and kind and merciful and forgiving. And we receive that into ourselves and say, that's what I want for myself. And so when we take the bread, it is saying we want strength for our journey. That we live the values. May in some way we take within to ourselves the very person that Jesus was. Some strange, mysterious, wonderful way. So there's an unconditional welcome. It's about reconciliation, coming back to God. And then this third word, community. Community, and I've hinted at this already. It is about you and me and us and them and everybody. Initially, when I put this point up, I denoted it as 1 plus 1, as in me taking communion or you taking communion. So 1 plus 1 equals. And then I was going to put a figure eight on its side. Do you know what a figure eight on its side means? Infinity. And I thought, no, I won't. That might be just too confusing. Okay? But that's why I put written, you and me and us and them. We are accepting for ourselves, this is not just about me and God. And if we think that communion is just about me and God, we've just misunderstood everything about communion. It is about you and me and God and us and them. It is 1 plus 1 is infinity. It is me and God and you and everybody. Because we know that God so loved the world that he sent Jesus. And that's what we're taking for ourselves. We're saying there's no limit to this. And so these are my reflections today on communion, just before we share it together. There is an unconditional welcome. Jesus is at the head of the table. You're invited to share in this simple way, understanding it's about reconciliation, coming back together, understanding it's about transformation. It's about us receiving and then walking away saying, okay, I want in some way to be different, living the life of Jesus as I go. And it's about this open community. May God bless us and help us in just a few moments as we share together.